Well, if we could just fully take that in, we wouldn't need any more this morning, would we? So difficult for our feeble human minds to take in the immensity of God and all that He has done for us. I thought I was all ready and right on time to go this morning, and then I made some changes to the notes in the second half of my sermon and went to print, and one of my printers is out of ink, and I had connected with the office printer the other day, and I went to print and it said offline, and no matter what I would do, it wouldn't come online. So Doug was helping me out. Steve came in, he said, just start, the pastor will be there. So I had to write out the second half, and we'll be fine. No basin, no bread. It could just as well have been titled, The Basin and the Bread. I want to start by reading from John chapter 13. Now before the feast of Passover, Jesus, knowing that His hour had come, that He would depart out of this world to the Father, having loved His own who were in the world, He loved them to the end. During supper, the devil, having already put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, the son of Simon, to betray Him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into His hands, and that He had come forth from God and was going back to God, got up from supper and laid aside His garments, and taking a towel, He girded Himself. Then He poured water into the basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel with which He was girded. So He came to Simon Peter, and He said to him, Simon did, Lord, do you wash my feet? Jesus answered and said to him, what I do you do not realize now, but you will understand hereafter. Peter said to Him, never shall you wash my feet. Jesus answered him, if I do not wash you, you have no part with me. I don't know if you've ever noticed it. I mean, it's quite obvious in many ways, but sometimes we just don't make the connections. But the story John tells, not in conflict, not at odds with the story of the other three Gospels, but at this juncture, strikingly different. You read here the whole account of the Passover supper in the upper room, and the bread and the wine, the body and the blood are hardly mentioned. There's no talk here of new covenant. There's no recitation of Jesus saying, this is my body broken for you. This is the blood of the new covenant. These things are completely missing here in this account of that supper in the upper room. I had never noticed that, and then one day I noticed it. And of course, it doesn't mean that the bread and the wine are not important. Broken body and the shed blood of Christ are everything to us. So then why does John seem to displace them with this focus on the basin? Where you expect the story of the body and the blood, instead you have the basin. Why has John made this shift of emphasis within the narrative. It's not that the other didn't happen. He just chooses to focus here. He must have had some important reason for shaping his narrative in this way. I began to think about this, and then I thought, well, perhaps we can begin to find the answer to why he did this by looking at the place in his gospel where he does talk about the body and the blood. That would be back in chapter 6. We look back there, and you remember the story. Jesus had fed the 5,000 the day before, and then he crossed the lake in the night. He came to another place, and they were looking for him. They had been moved by that bread that he gave. They're looking for him, and they find him. And then Jesus engages in this long discourse where he tells them, unless you eat my body and drink my blood, you have no life in you. That's really the only part of this that The only part of this that we need to pay attention to right now, there in verse 53. I quoted it, but we'll read it again. And Jesus said to them, truly, truly, I say to you, unless you eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, you have no life in yourselves. Well, there it is. It's the emphasis on the body and the blood, isn't it? Not found in chapter 13 where the Lord's Supper is taking place, but found here in chapter 6 in this sermon of Jesus. It's a communion emphasis, isn't it? Unless you eat, unless you drink, unless you partake deeply and profoundly of my life, you have no life. It's a communion emphasis, a new covenant emphasis. The Lord giving his life for the life of the world. It's an emphasis on the complete provision that Jesus has made for us. But what I want you to notice is that the goal of this giving, this self-giving of the Lord, this atoning work, the goal is so that we might have his life in us. That we might have life, he says, but this is the life that is to be in us, his life. That's his goal and purpose. There's a little book. It's only, I think, about 63 pages. You won't be able to find it. Well, maybe you could. I don't know. In the booksellers today, it was written by a man named Henry Scougal, 17th century Scottish preacher. It's a famous book because it was Scougal's little book that fired up and converted both George Whitefield and John Wesley, the mighty champions and leaders of what we call the Great Awakening, began first in England and then eventually in New England. But Scougal's little book, he has this classic definition tucked away in that little book of the Christian life. Here's Scougal's definition of what it means to be a Christian. It's the life of God, he said, in the soul of man. The life of God in the soul of man. That's what it means to be a Christian. To have his life in me. The power of that life. The strength of that life. The beauty of that life. It's nothing I produce. It's not something I work up or come up with on my own. No, it's the life he gives. His body, his blood given for the world. His life. Through his atoning work, the life of God in the soul of man. That's what Christianity is. Not just a morality, not just people trying to be good. It's the life of God in us. a power from outside of ourselves, doing for us and accomplishing in us what we could never do on our own. The life of God in the soul of man. The Apostle Paul gives what is essentially the same definition, Galatians chapter 2, verse 20. He says, I have been crucified with Christ, and it is no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. Do you see it there? The same emphasis, the life of God in the soul of man, the life that comes from Him. This is the purpose of the atonement, that we might have this life in us. It's the very same emphasis. You also find it in Paul's letter to the Ephesians. Paul's letter to the Ephesians in chapter 3, at the end of his great prayer there, he says, verse 17, he's praying that we'd be strengthened with power through God's Spirit in the inner man, so that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith, and that you, being rooted and grounded in love, may be able to comprehend with all the saints what is the breadth and length and height and depth, and to know the love of Christ, which surpasses knowledge, that, and listen to this last phrase, that you may be filled up to all the fullness of God. It's an astounding vision. It's an astounding vision. We filled up with the fullness of God's life. It's an astounding vision. And so this is the goal of Christ's atoning work, of His broken body and spilt blood, that we should know the great grand covering of forgiving love over our lives, and also the great power of His life and His Spirit working within us. This is what the body and the blood are all about. This end, this goal. And so when the Lord sees us coming to take communion, coming to His table, He gets excited. He says, oh, they're coming. They're coming. They're coming to receive all that I purchased for them, all that I gained for them. They're coming with hearts open. They want to come to my table. Oh, He says, I delight to give them my life. So why then the foot washing? Why the foot washing? You know, we have to think about these things. We have to reflect on them. Foot washing, communion, it's not just a mindless ritual, not just something we go through because that particular Sabbath has come round again. No, we want to think. We want to reflect. We want to prayerfully seek to understand more and more what these things mean. So why the foot washing? I'll tell you why the foot washing. It's because they weren't ready to come to the table and receive His life. They weren't ready. They weren't in the proper mind. Their spirit was all distorted and twisted in other directions. They weren't ready. You know, the life of the Lord, this life that we've just seen is to flood into ours and to fill ours and up to the very fullness of God. That life is not just any kind of life. It's a life that has specific commitments in it and a specific purpose and a spirit that is different than that found in other lives. It's not just any kind of life. It's the Lord's life. There's things that rule it and passions that undergird it, profound commitments that inform it. Not just any kind of life. And here's these disciples, and they had seen his life, and they were drawn by his life. They had here and there received from his life, but at this particular point and place in time, they weren't ready to come to the table. They weren't ready to take in that life so different from every other human life. Oh, but not only that, not only were they not ready, they didn't even know they weren't ready. Their minds, their hearts were dull and stupid and blind to the great reality of his life and what it was, to the spirit that informed him. They couldn't see that. Because they couldn't see it, they had a very different spirit at work in them. I'm not. Who's? No one assigned anyone. I see them talking to each other. No one assigned anybody to wash the feet. John, was that your lapse? Did you forget to get a servant here to wash our feet? Whose fault is this? Well, maybe Matthew. Maybe you could do. I'm not doing that. That's not my job. We can't just go to the table with pride, dignity, false dignity. Oh, that's beneath me. You see the spirit that had taken hold of them. They'd been arguing on the way there about who was the greatest and who was going to have the highest position. And you can't go from that kind of argument to saying, here, brother, let me serve you. Let me wash your feet. And so you see that there was this spirit that had taken hold of them, and they weren't ready to go to the table. And they didn't even know it. They didn't see how different their spirit was from his spirit. Oh, and I wonder, I do more than wonder, I know in regards to myself, doesn't this happen to us sometimes? Not really ready for the table, not ready to take in his life. And if we try to come, the table is just a dull routine for us because something's wrong in the spirit. So is there hope? What is our hope when this happens to us? Oh, our hope is Jesus. Our hope is Jesus, because here we are going through our lives not even aware of the ways in which we are not like him. But then when we're there in that place in our ignorance and our dullness, Jesus comes, girds himself, takes up the towel and the basin, and he comes and he takes our feet in his hands and begins to wash. And then that's when it happens. As he takes our feet in his hands, somehow our eyes are opened, and all of a sudden we see the tremendous difference between his life and ours, between his spirit and our spirit. We see it as he washes our feet, as he takes our feet in his hands, it all opens up to us. And we realize, Lord, I am not like you. I am not like you, Lord, in my commitments, in my desires, in my pursuits, in my spirit. Oh, Lord, so often I am not like you. It comes home to us as he washes our feet. You see, he makes the move. We don't discover these things all on our own. We don't come to these insights of the disparity between our life and his by some spiritual genius of our own. No, he comes. He opens our eyes. When he picks up the basin and the towel and washes our feet. It all becomes clear. I'm not like my Lord. I am not as I was meant to be. And there we are with Him kneeling before us. And at that place we are ashamed. Ashamed at what we are not, and yet full of hope. Full of hope. Because at the moment of revelation, I am not alone. When I see how unlike Him I am not alone. He has my feet in His hands. And so I'm ashamed, and my heart feels sad, and yet I'm full of hope. Oh, and then from that place where that conviction has come home and I see the depth of my need, the Lord opens up His arm and points to the table. And He says, "My body and my blood. My body and my blood. I've given my life for you. You can take in my life." Again, not your accomplishment, not your attainment, not something you somehow worked up enough spiritual energy to do. No, open your heart, open your mouth, take in my life. It's more than just the disciples' pride. There's all kinds of things in our lives where when He opens our eyes, and He's so merciful, one at a time, He says, "Okay, this next, then this." He doesn't open the whole record, all the failings at once. He comes so tenderly and compassionately and says, "I'm going to wash this part of your foot right now. I want to change this part of your life." Oh, and He opens our eyes, and all of a sudden we say, "Lord, I never saw before how unlike my spirit was from yours until right now. Oh, Lord, I see it now." And in that place He says, "Come to my table. I have everything you need." Oh, and then when we come from having had our eyes opened, when we come from seeing the depth of our spiritual need and hunger, we come to the table, and the table has then become to us the most precious thing in all the universe. Well, it's not that way if we don't come hungry. It's not that way if we don't come awake and alive to all the places He wants to change in us. It's not that way if the basin hasn't done its work in our hearts. We come and we go through a ritual and we leave untouched, unchanged. Oh, but when He takes your feet in His hands and he puts His finger on that one place He wants to work on, and you realize, "You know, I'm not like the Lord in this part of my life," then you get up from that foot washing, and the table is what you want most. "Give me that table or I die. Give me that table or I have no life in myself." That's what we realize. And the table becomes more precious to us than life itself, because it is life itself. Oh, do you see? The whole of Christianity is encompassed right here in what we act out today. The basin and the table. The basin and the bread. No basin, no real bread. But the basin works and the bread has power. And we come to have His very life in us. Oh, that's what I want. Isn't it what you want? How many want His life brimful in you? Just keep asking Him, "Lord, wash my feet and then take me to your table." And it will happen.
his life will be in you and in me, brimful and flowing over.